Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneville. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
And hello once again. Boomer Tech Radio is the name of the show. Not sure why I sound like I'm in an echo chamber. I think I had it up to the music up too loud. I sound weird. Why do I sound weird? Now I sound less weird.
You must have been something you ate.
Must have been. Welcome to the show with the goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, tech news you can use. That was really strange.
You are.
I'm Bob Belongi.
Along with Brenda Belongi.
And tech news you can use, as you can see, even we haven't mastered all things technical.
You're out of your, it threw you for a loop.
It did. I could not, I was getting this odd echo from somewhere, and I'm going, why am I hearing an echo? Of course, the room that we record in here, the main studio at KCNR AM, used to be quite echoey. And we put up acoustical tiles. And those are now taken down because they were dirty and they were to be washed and replaced. The process, so, you know, take them down, wash them, and replace.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, two out of three is bad because they were taken down and washed, but they have not yet been replaced. So the room is a little livelier.
Yeah, a little livelier than it was.
If you've ever seen real radio studios on television, you see these wavy foam things. That isn't just for aesthetics. It soaks up the sound. And this stuff is actually pretty cheap. If you have a room and you're trying to kill some of the echoes and reflections in the room, you actually get this stuff for not terribly much money. Usually about $50 gets you enough to cover, it's about $1 a square foot.
Well, think about going into an empty house. If you've ever moved in an empty room, it's echoey and that sort of thing. As soon as you put furniture and things like that in it, it tends not to be. This isn't as bad as some of the Skype calls that I've heard, however.
Mm-hmm.
This is not that echoey or you know, sound like you're in a tin can or what have you. It is, but your discerning ear can tell that.
Yeah.
But I think most listeners probably don't notice the difference.
Well, you know, if you are listening for acoustical anomalies, you're likely to find them. Generally speaking, though, we get used to something and we end up ignoring it. Anyway, we cover all things tech. We're not going to Kim Commando your computer, and we're not going to, I don't claim to be as smart as someone like, for instance, Leo Laporte, but we have our own take on things. I've been involved in broadcasting for just about four decades, so I think I've got a little bit of background and knowledge on such things. Struck me as we were coming to the station today to record, this episode being pre-recorded, we stopped for coffee. And we have transitioned from padded paper or walkie-talkies to tablets in the hands of the people who stand outside and take your order without even really noticing it.
Four or five cars back. You know? Yeah. It's amazing how quickly you get used to something that is eminently practical and helpful like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's only been in the last year that coffee company's been doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet it feels like it's been done forever. It's just so logical.
It's become ubiquitous. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. It's just so practical and logical.
Same with tablets as point-of-sale terminals, because tablets are relatively cheap. They can be updated easily. You can attach the little credit card reader to them fairly easily. And they have become very ubiquitous in new businesses. But every once in a while, you'll still see somebody with a massive... I haven't seen a mechanical cash register for a while. You usually find those in, places like Barstow or something.
Well, I don't know. I'm not sure Barstow...
El Centro, maybe?
That vintage. Barstow's not that vintage, but...
They're out-of-the-way places you will find sort of stuff.
I can't remember the last time I saw one of those.
Mm-hmm. But we tend to go with familiar things, but under the hood, there is some unfamiliar things going. Case in point, a friend of ours was when we went to C. Crane Company over in Fortuna, which is a company that started out because a gentleman was frustrated because he couldn't pick up the ball games he wanted to listen to from Fortuna, California, which is a little bit to the south of Eureka. Well, he started looking into ways to improve his radio reception and started shopping some of the best radios in the world, which are still are in some cases made by a company in Germany, of course, called Grundig.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful radios. A lot of people have these Grundig radios. They are sort of a point of pride. But there's accessories. For instance, there's these loop antennas that you can put next to an AM radio to help increase its ability to filter out interference from adjacent stations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was their claim to fame for many, many years. And mostly, C. Crane Company was selling products made by other people, designed and made by other people. More recently, as the economy slowed down, they narrowed their focus and came up with a smaller group of products, but they designed them in-house because they have become quite the savvy experts on radio listening and sell them under their own brand.
Yeah, well, actually, that started out some time ago with that. When he moved and couldn't get his Giants games, and he started messing around with radios to see how to make that work. And I think you're right. It started with an antenna.
Yeah.
That he was messing around
and
with.
The and CC so, radio. Right,
and things just kind of developed from there.
For a time, they had a timed cassette recorder before the days of digital. They had a cassette recorder that you could put on a timer, like a VCR, to record your favorite overnight shows, and a talk show host named by Art Bell hawked these items on his show because... a lot of people who
worked
couldn't stay up overnight to listen to this show, and there was no practical way to set it up. So they actually made a VCR for the radio.
I remember them advertising C. Crane stuff on Coast to Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
That's why all that Art Bell stuff is up on the wall there.
Yeah, that's right.
One of the products we looked at, and this is an interesting bit of perspective, the internet radio. And what the internet, it looks and behaves, as far as the interface is concerned, like a tabletop radio.
Mm-hmm.
What it actually is doing, though, is pulling down streams from websites.
Right, from your local Wi-Fi. I mean, you can't take this out where you don't have Wi-Fi
correct.
Connectivity.
It has to be tied
to
a Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
But its behavior is designed to emulate tabletop radio.
Yeah.
A friend of ours who was with
tiny.
Yeah, very small. Friend of ours who was with us, why would you want to buy this separate piece of hardware when you can just do this on your computer or your tablet? Aha. Some people have a mental block or a willful block about using something with a screen and a keyboard and a mouse. Or even a touch screen.
Well, or if it's just, there's a certain amount of portability with it, which is what appealed to me about it, is that it's tiny.
Yeah.
It's small. And so you have a computer or a tablet, even. Tablets don't have great speakers.
Right.
But this little radio does.
Yeah, it had a fabulous speaker. But the familiarity.
And the tablet can be your portal into the web.
And you don't have to mess with the operating system. It does one thing.
Right.
Whereas a tablet or a laptop computer can do many things. And I think that's what kind of messes some people up, because the devices like tablets and laptops are so flexible and can do so many things.
Right.
That people get a little fearful of them. Same with how stuff is presented on the screen. If you started with DOS, and then you transitioned into, well, you remember, you were actually working in the industry when text-based command line DOS on the old IBM 286 transitioned over to the graphical interface.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And the first successful one from Windows. Now, there were others out there. The copier company, Xerox, helped develop the graphical user interface, but they didn't really push it. Windows was trying to get something going, and then along came a little company called Apple.
Mm.
And their first, and they've been doing the Apple II, which ran a distinctly different operating system than the Apple III, which didn't get a lot of it. Then they disastrously tried to move into the business world with the Apple Lisa. They tried to anticipate tablets with the Newton, which was an overpriced disaster because it was so far ahead of its time.
Yeah, probably so. Yep.
So they came up with this graphical interface in the famous 1984 commercial. And I remember the television commercial where you need this to operate your IBM. It was a huge stack of manuals. You need this to operate your Macintosh. And it was a mouse and a pamphlet.
Yeah. It's always amazed me that Apple still says it's so intuitive. The first Apple I encountered, no, not really.
Your first
intuitive
Mac?
Yeah. I wouldn't call it intuitive. Whereas the whole thing was about DOS. You had to know language and know where the files, be able to navigate to the different directories and stuff.
Syntax error.
Yeah. And for me, it's there somewhere. It's just how you get there. And, of course, now Windows looks like the original Apple sort of did and uses icons. So that was kind of funny. I thought that was interesting when Microsoft went over to icons, which Apple's had for a long, long time before that. But whatever. It's what you get used to.
Now, the operating systems, of course, the two at the top of the heap, by far the top of the heap is Microsoft Windows. Then comes Mac OS, and then comes Linux. It can be argued that Linux is on more machines than it is on Apple machines, but most of us don't see it. Most Linux machines are tucked away in a building somewhere because it's kind of a lean, mean operating system that takes a little bit of know-how. And I've had people write me here at this program saying, you should tell all your listeners if they're tired
of Microsoft stuff.
get on a Linux machine.
It's not that simple.
Linux is a great system if you know what you're doing.
Well, it's
you can make that jump.
Right. But Linux, I think Linux is more like DOS in style, if you will, because you have to know command line language.
It certainly helps.
Yeah.
The latest iterations, you very rarely have to dive into command line.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
now,
good.
By what do we mean by command line? That's where literally you are communicating
typing it out
directly to the machine, not
C
going
colon,
through a graphic interface.
Yeah, C colon dot dot. Backslant, forward slant, whatever. You have to know what file to go to and that sort of thing. More like DOS was. So I have not encountered a Linux system that's like that. Everything I've had to do on a Linux system at work has been command line stuff, but that's because of the nature of what's being done. So.
Mm-hmm.
I was unaware that they had icons now.
Therein lies a tale. Yes, there are some graphical commands graphical add-ons to, for instance, Ubuntu, which is one of the most popular Linux distributions, that you almost never have to go into a command line type structure. It does all that for you. The commands are still being issued, but you're using an interface, just like on any operating system. The command, at the end of the day, the command that is still going into the computer is still in a machine language. what the operating system is doing is simply interpreting your input and turning it into commands that the system can understand.
No.
When it gets down to the processor level, both Mac and IBM are using Intel processors for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mac OS will only run on a Mac system, but of course there's alternate processors from AMD and other manufacturers. You know, ARM will run Windows, although with difficulty. That's another manufacturer of the CPU. Intel, of course, king of the hill on that. There are rumors that Apple may go back to what it used to do and use their own branded processors instead of running IBM.
Intel
and they
or
did,
IBM.
Yeah, instead of running Intel processors.
Yeah.
Time was when the PowerPC came out, they used an Apple branded processor, and then for economy, they switched over to an Intel based system, which is the reason why you can actually, with appropriate software, get a Mac to run Microsoft programs with an interpreter, because the commands
sense.
When they get down to the processor are the same commands. You know, go to this memory, fetch this piece of information, write this to the screen.
Right.
But there are several layers between you, the operator, and that central processing unit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the things that came up this week in a discussion was the difference between a Windows presentation and a Mac OS presentation as far as what you see on the screen. Most of the stuff is similar, but there's just enough difference between the two operating systems that it messes some people up. Now, I'm not really super fluent at either one, but I can usually transition back and forth. And what messes some people up is that by default, Windows 10 gives you pictures of things. It is it's a graphical interface, so they give you icons of things. A music file has a icon with a musical note on it.
Yeah,
a picture file gives you a thumbnail of the picture.
Right.
This eats up a lot of screen real estate.
It does. Yep.
As you were saying, if you're looking for a PDF file, you don't need a couple of square inches of your precious screen taken up with a picture that says PDF.
Right.
You can look at the file extension.
Right.
Now, that's an annoyance for me that Microsoft and Mac OS strips off the extension, because that extension gives you a bit of a clue going on.
With what kind of a file it is.
Yeah.
You know, is it a text file? Is it a this? Is it that? And or is it a picture? You know, the thumbnail can indicate that, too. But, yeah, I don't care for Windows' propensity to provide you with a view that has these thumbnail sketches on the side of the file name, because like you said, Bob, it takes up a lot of screen space, and so then you end up scrolling through or what have you. I prefer a list, and there's an easy way to make that change.
In either operating system, if you look at the top menu bar where it says File, Edit, and all that sort of stuff, look for a button that says View. That's a drop-down menu. Or there may be a button right on that top toolbar, which is what all those buttons along the top are called, is your toolbar. And if you look along there, you'll see two buttons next to each other. One of them has a bunch of parallel lines, and the one next to it will look more like a checkerboard.
Right. The one with the parallel lines is often referred to as a hamburger menu.
Yeah. Well, in this case, it's a list menu.
Or list. Well, they
a list
they,
view.
They still call those hamburgers.
Well, hamburger menus are a little different in that they cause a drop down to take place.
Oh.
List view has four or five parallel lines.
Ah.
Whereas a hamburger menu generally has three.
Right, the bun and the meat.
Right. Now, you may say, well, where did all this stuff come? These are conventions that have been adopted over the years. But when you switch between, or you may see a word that says, now, often on the operating systems, if you just hover your mouse over something, you'll actually get a hint as to what it is, what it's going to do. So if you hover your cursor over the little checkerboard, it will say, switch to icon view.
Right.
If you hover it over the parallel lines, switch to list view. List view just lists the files.
Right.
You can, now you'll get a bunch of columns, looks kind of like a spreadsheet, and you can sort those. Here's the trick on these operating systems. You can now sort these files alphabetically up and down.
Yep.
You can sort them by the most recent file that you updated.
Right.
Or you could sort them by file type. And
yep.
This is kind of handy if you want to get all your pictures in a group.
Mm-hmm.
You click on one of those columns, and then if you click again, it'll reverse the order.
Mm-hmm.
So if you save something and you know it went into your downloads folder and you don't remember quite what it's called, if you open your downloads folder,
right,
click date modified.
Right. It'll bring it up.
It'll pop it right to the top
yep.
of the list.
And that's I've used that quite a few times.
That's a really handy way to find something that you just downloaded, and it's nothing but a jumble of numbers and letters, as sometimes downloaded files are. Another thing you need to be aware of is when you download a application from the Internet, often it is in compressed form. It's in a zip file.
Mm-hmm.
In the Mac world, it can be in a zip file that then becomes a DMG file. And this is all extensions. Those are a DMG is an installer for the Mac OS.
Hmm.
But those are not the final application. So you have to go through a couple of steps, especially in Mac OS, to actually install the application to your computer. Most of the time, it takes you by the hand and walks you through. The point I was trying to get to here is that when you find yourself looking at an unfamiliar screen, don't panic.
Mm-hmm.
Take a little time and look at your options. You can't really hurt anything. The computer isn't going to start spewing smoke
no.
and little red flags come out of it. And tilt.
Well, it's also unlikely that you're going to lose files.
Correct.
You know, they're in there somewhere. And
you have to kind of work to make a file just vanish.
You do have to work at it. So, and if you've never done that, you've never explored. So what I do is, when I'm in files like text files or documents, I'll use the list function to see all my documents. When I'm looking at pictures, then I will switch to the thumbnails.
Right, and
then
you can go to small ones, big ones.
Exactly. You have options in there for the different size of thumbnails that you're looking at. So if you're looking for a specific picture, and so those I switch back and forth mm-hmm. when I'm doing things like that. Because it is very handy to have thumbnails for mm-hmm. the pictures. And it just makes it a lot easier to find it because you may not remember what the file's called, but you'll remember what it looks like. And whereas files that are documents, you tend more to know something about what it, if you're labeling them using a file name that's reflective of what the file is, then you can find it that a lot more easily too. But then you can sort through, like you said, date or alphabetical listings, most recently modified, or the type of file. And those are all ways that you can manage your files and sort of use the library card system, if you want to look at it that way, to mm-hmm. find your stuff.
Yeah. Now, by the same token, if you get an email and it's got a zip file in it, be very careful.
Oh,
be
yes.
Be very wary. because the best, before you open that file, contact your friend. Pick up the phone. Contact your friend and say, did you, especially if you're not expecting it.
Well, that's assuming
did that you send me that file?
That's assuming it comes from somebody you know.
Right.
If it comes from an entity that you don't know, have never done business with, or
yeah,
whatever,
do not
don't open it.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Here,
you're asking
a famous
for a
phishing
headache.
Thing was, here's the file you were expecting. And
yeah.
It may be somebody you know, but that could be a phished
yep.
address.
Yep, it definitely could be.
So most of these require input from you to set off the bomb.
Yep.
So please be, you know, use a little judicious common sense when it comes to your operating system. But honestly, as a rule, simply, you know, get a little familiar. We learn how to drive our cars, don't we? We practice around with them. We go to driver's ed, things
sure.
like that.
Computers
and somebody,
are terribly yeah. different.
somebody asked me, well, why isn't there manuals for all this stuff? It's because the manual would have to be about a foot thick and take half a forest.
Google it.
Google it down. Plenty of help out there. Plenty of help on this show, too. We'll be back after the break here on Boomer Tech Radio with my son, Alan, with more of the tech news you can use right here on Boomer Tech Radio. It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road, Reading, 244-4423.
I am Dan, owner of Dan's Optical Lab. For years, I've made prescription eyewear for other eye doctors throughout the North State. Now I'm opening my lab directly to the public. You can purchase the highest quality in prescription eyewear put directly from the lab. That means you get it faster and you get it for less. I don't just sell prescription eyewear, I make it. And because I do, I have to know more about the lens materials, designs, and frames that are available. If you want the highest quality in prescription eyewear, then go where the doctors go, Dan's Optical Lab, faster for less.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
Shasta Regional Medical Center is located in the heart of downtown Reading and was the recipient of the 2017 Health Grades Patient Safety and Excellence Award. Our hospital is committed to always providing exceptional care and performance as a certified chest pain center, certified primary stroke center, and most recently earning the Joint Commission's Gold Seal of Approval for hip and knee replacement. When it comes to quality, compassion, and community, Shasta Regional Medical Center is the community choice.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
Spring is springing, the trees are leafing, the birds are chirping, and temperatures are on the rise. So, your heater's probably the last thing on your mind, right? Fact is, right now is the perfect time to prepare for next winter. Through June 8th, SST Oil is offering 20% off maintenance and 10% off parts with an additional 5% discount for our veterans. SST Oil Services Monitor and Toyotomi brands of heaters and water heaters. When you call SST at 241-1167, ask about early bird discounts on kerosene May through July. SST Oil on Windham Lane in Reading, 530-241-1167.
It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school. Or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, You rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting advancedautoreading.com or go to repairpal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
Welcome back to Boomer Tech Radio, the tech news you can use. I am Bob Belongi, and here with me on the Skype line is my son, Alan, and he's bringing us some technical headlines of the week. Alan, hello.
Hello, how are you today?
Not bad, not bad. It's doing all kinds of things, playing with some video equipment. In fact, we're stacking up, getting ready to go out and do a video shoot. I was pointing out to someone earlier today that you can do high, you know, network quality video with equipment that you can just pack around in two hands that used to take an entire truck.
Right.
And it's high definition and all kind, and we can share it with the whole world instantly, which is a good thing and a bad thing from my point of view. Some people overshare when it comes to their videos, and then some people who want to share stuff just among their friends discovered that they were sharing it with the world at large via Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook has, you know, been kicked a couple of times while they're down here. A recent bug happens to where whenever you share something or post something or whatever on Facebook, you have a couple different settings for who you want to post it to, you know, friends, select people, or everybody in the world, right? And that choice is usually sticky, as in it remembers it next time when you do it. But a recent bug caused it to not be sticky and snap back to public for any time you post something new, which has caused probably a lot of people to post something inadvertently as public when they intended to just post it to a couple of people, which they had been posting to.
Oh, boy.
And I don't know. I can't blame, like, Facebook too much about it. It's not, I don't feel it's something I'm, like, super outraged about. I mean, you probably should be checking your posting statuses when you're posting something super private anyway, or just, I don't know, not posting on Facebook, but that's a different story. But it said on every post that this is being posted to public, you know, in a little corner where it said the privacy level of this post. So a lot of people are getting mad about it, but it seems like just a bug. You know, sometimes settings don't get sticky. It just right. happens with programming.
Never put anything online that you wouldn't put on a billboard at the edge of town for all to see.
Because it's probably going to be seen by everybody
exactly.
anyway.
Exactly. You know, I'm not feeling a great deal of sympathy for the people who are shouting and waving their arms in the air because something wasn't perfect every single time. It's not that sort of world, boys and girls.
I mean, it's bad timing on Facebook's end for sure. I mean, they're having all sorts of privacy and security issues and bad policies
oh, sure,
and all
this
that.
This doesn't help.
But this is hardly on the same level at all. It's a, you know, a sticky setting which you've been able to change all the time anyway. It's just, in fact, most of the time for things like this, it wouldn't even remember. I think sticky settings are sometimes kind of a problem because then you get a little complacent with it, and it's better to double-check things like that every time you do something anyways,
absolutely.
In my opinion.
Absolutely. Moving on, not a lot of people outside of the gaming world are familiar with a company called Steam. And Steam,
well, the company's Valve.
Oh, the company is Valve. That's right. Steam is a service that allows you to subscribe to games rather than going down to the store, the electronic store, not that there's very many of those left, or ordering a single game and then it sits on your shelf and you install it off the DVD and all that stuff. Steam is a one-stop shop for everything from classic PC 8-bit games all the way up through the latest and greatest high graphics games, massive online player games like Elder Scrolls Online, Fallout 4, Witcher, a bunch. I don't think Witcher is a massive multiplayer game,
no.
But most of the big games are available through subscribe. Well, you still have to buy them, but it's a one-stop shop for these games. So they have now, and I understand they've got a couple of pieces of news, but first of all, they've made a policy change. What's that about?
So recently there's been some bit of ambiguousness towards some of the more dicey games that are available on there, things that you probably wouldn't want to show your kids.
Not safe for work.
Right. And there's been some odd changes, you know, being mentioned by some of the developers, being like, Steam is not letting them do updates right, or some of them have been getting some of their games like taken off the front page, and it's caused a lot of like backlash against it, because some of these developers, this is the only way they're able to like promote their game, since otherwise they'd have to rely on, you know, banner ads and getting people to come to their site to buy the game. And when it's in this online store, it really helps them get you know, visibility for what they're selling.
So this is a content thing. Maybe something has some controversial content, whether it be sexual or whether it be socially dicey.
Right. Either excessive violence, but the recent controversies have been mostly about the sexual portions of the game or whatnot.
Right.
But anyway, Valve, the company behind Steam, eventually, actually just a couple days ago, came to the conclusion that they don't want to go around and try to police what should or shouldn't be allowed on the site. So they've changed their policy from we'll take it down if we feel like it to we're only going to not allow things if they're obviously illegal, as in they have some sort of illegal content in them, or they have stolen assets, stolen portions from other games in it, or if it's automatic, or if it's a troll.
Mm-hmm.
And the troll is likely referring to this one game that was up for a while that they took down that was about school shootings.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit. And, you know, essentially community standards. And you look at the community as a whole, not just the noisy niche group.
Mm-hmm. So I view it as a good thing. I'd rather they didn't police things just because they don't like them. You know, you might not be – yeah, a store is perfectly within their rights to keep whatever on their shelves that they want. They don't have
Apple
to stock
yeah.
certain things.
Yeah.
But since it's such a big and powerful distributor for – a lot of indie developers, independent developers that don't go through a big publisher, it's super helpful to the smaller guys to let them use the Steam service and let the creative medium do whatever it feels like it can do. And it's coming along with a whole bunch of different filter settings so you can make sure to not see whatever it is you don't want to see in the store.
Right. I also understand, and maybe we'll talk about this one next week, Steam and Apple appear to be coming to an agreement. Steam had the go-ahead to create an app on the Apple App Store. Then that permission was suddenly withdrawn when Apple figured out that, gee, this might be competing with the App Store in terms of game sales. It looks like maybe they're cutting a deal, which will be good. Now, what's going to be kind of curious is that, again, some content available through Steam would be in direct violation of Apple's very strict family-friendly community standards. There's a lot of apps you will not see in the App Store for the Apple platform, precisely because they are not in step with Apple's community values, if you will. And that was a big thing for Steve Jobs. So we'll see. We'll see what happens if only certain games get through on the mobile platform. But that is, of course, playing games on a mobile device is
a bit of a lesser experience,
to say the least. Back in the news, the hospital in Atlanta still not out. They still don't have all their records back.
Well, it's actually the whole city, government. It's been now known as the SAM ransomware attack that Atlanta's government's been dealing with for a while. They're estimating now that in addition to their about $2 million they've spent already fixing everything up, you know, all the way from court records to police videos all getting deleted, that it's going to cost them about another close to $10 million to get everything reset up.
Which is why you have off-site backups.
A lot of people are starting to wonder, like, how bad is their IT department there in the city of Atlanta that let it get so bad and have no recourse for if it all goes down? It just seems really amateur from any sort of IT professional looking at it, how badly the whole thing's been managed.
Just about any company I've ever been around, and admittedly I don't have vast experience at this, but just about any company I'm aware of routinely does quarterly tape backup. You back up everything, and then you store the tape.
Right. You put it somewhere else, not connected to your servers.
So at least you have a point to go forward from. This sounds like a cost-cutting measure that turned around and just bit them on the butt to me.
This sounds an awful lot like that to me, too.
Oh, dear me. Now, the ride-sharing service Uber has been accused of taking advantage of... Now, there's, of course, the law of supply and demand, but Uber's being accused of taking advantage of busy times and really jacking up their prices, and the city of Honolulu doing something about it?
Yeah, so down in Hawaii, they've implemented or starting to implement measures that would prevent surge pricing, which means if a lot of people need a ride from, you know, an event or during peak hours, the automatic price generation based on demand that Uber, you know, creates would be artificially capped at a certain limit, which, you know, since all of their drivers down there are up to individual discretion of whether they want to go pick somebody up or not, the reason why they get a lot of drivers during peak hours is because, you know, it's a lot more of a pain in the butt to go pick somebody up when it's super busy or go to an event to grab somebody or whatnot. But with the new measures, they're starting to implement price caps, which feels an awful lot like, you know, what they've already done for taxi services in a lot of places. And it just feels like you're trying to artificially change how supply and demand works. And for the most part, that just doesn't really work all that well, especially with how, you know, new and fluid that modern, you know, tech companies need to react.
Yeah, yeah. On the other hand, people, you know, and you wonder if this is not a favor to the rather powerful taxi drivers union, but there have been a lot of complaints that the peak charges or surge charges are a little bit out of hand. We'll see.
Yes. And like one of the example on here, the councilwoman down there, Kimberly Macross Pine, who voted for the bill, said that she was recently heard of U.S. Navy sailors getting off ships at Pearl Harbor, were recently charged as much as $221 to get to Waikiki from there, when a regular cab ride was $44. And it's like, then maybe he should have just taken the regular cab ride.
Yeah, Not a, unless you got a hot date waiting for you, yeah, wait for the regular taxi. Good grief.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point of the Uber service is it's faster and usually cheaper, but it's not always going to be with their whole, you know, automatic price adjustment depending on demand.
That does sound quite a bit like gouging. Now, a lot of people still don't know that Google has a parent company named Alphabet, and this was probably something figured out by a focus group. And there's been a lot of pressure to mandate quotas for ethnic diversity within the company. And shareholders apparently are not agreeing.
Yeah, so there's been a lot of proposals recently that would tie pay rates and promotions to attempt to equal wages among female and minorities that work at Alphabet, which actually Alphabet workers are comprised of about 40% Asians, so it's not really, you know, all that diverse there. Totally, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so shareholders, in a, in my opinion, somewhat sane decision, decided not to implement a lot of these decisions that would essentially give people raises and hire people at different rates depending on their skin color, which seems kind of racist to me, but
We will see. China. Now, I would assume that they have most furniture in China greatly resembles furniture here in the United States. And if you're just looking at a sofa, you don't particularly think in a certain direction. Apparently, Chinese officials think differently.
Yeah, China's been really clamping down on anything they can see as obscene, including beds, couches, tattoos, drinking, smoking, or even flirtatious dancing. It's another move to, you know, do their best to make sure nobody has any fun in China. And they're doing their darndest to make sure that there's no discourse or any talk about
that affects
opposing
the public morale, yeah, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's, you know, social engineering to the worst degree, and it's been getting worse and worse under Xi Jinping, who's even outlawed anybody making any sort of like nickname for him.
Oh,
someone recently got like 2 weeks in jail by comparing him to Winnie the Pooh.
Well, that's possibly better than, say, North Korea, where if people refer to Kim Jong-un as the Cabbage Patch president, they probably end up staring down the barrel of a gun.
I mean, if I had to choose between the two, sure, I'd go for China, but I'd really rather not have a choice between the two.
Yeah. It's all, you know, it gets abused, but God bless the First Amendment.
Oh, yeah. I mean, having open is way better than, you know, trying to whack-a-mole problems as they crop up, because
right.
Eventually you're going to hit every single mole that crops up.
Yeah, but some others will come up elsewhere. Now, when I was probably right around your age, Alan, there was this big, gigantic, humongous telecommunications company called AT&T that essentially ran every telephone in the United States. They had subsidiaries known as part of the Bell system, but they owned the telephones, they owned the lines, and they essentially were a gigantic monopoly. Along came some legislation. The AT&T was broken up into smaller and smaller companies and is now a shadow of its former self. And folks are starting to wonder if maybe Google and associated companies have just become so big that they control just too much market share. And the Europeans have been saying this for a while, but it's finally coming up in the U.S.?
No, it's this particular one is an antitrust fine that came from the Euros again.
Mm.
It had to do with Google's operating system for their phone, Android.
Yep.
And it's starting to look more and more like Google might have to start divesting itself away from its Android just to keep these antitrust things from hurting them too badly.
Yes.
You know, because any Android phone, which is practically any phone that's not Apple,
right,
comes with Google and everything all installed in it. And there's been a lot of antitrust talk about it, reminiscent to how every Windows machine back in the day came with Internet Explorer.
Right.
Which made it really hard for, you know, Netscape Navigator to get a foothold.
All right, well, Netscape was based in San Diego, and it was a big blow when, Microsoft was giving away the free browser. Of course, they give nothing away. That it turns out they were just harvesting all your data.
And the times repeat themselves.
But yeah, exactly. Oh, dear. And that's not the only Google story you've got here. Now,
I want to start this by saying I don't care about emojis at all, but go ahead.
Yeah. I think I actually used one this morning, a coffee thing. I will occasionally, and if you do texting on Skype, you can do emojis on that, some of which are kind of funny. But I limit my use. There's people, there was a disastrous movie. It was supposed to be emojis. And there are some people, they will only converse in emojis, which is sort of a hieroglyphics thing to me. But originally, the characters in emojis were all, let's face it, just white people. Well, that caused
a lot of them were yellow people.
Well, kind of a buff color. And then, so there was a lot of consternation about, okay, we need to have racial diversity. Well, now we need to have pride icons, and now we need to have these icons. And so what's behind...
This is reminiscent of the whole whack-a-mole thing I said earlier. You're eventually just going to have to whack everything as they crop up.
Why? Who did the lowly egg offend?
Vegans.
Of course.
There was an egg... in the salad emoji, which actually I'm not sure a single vegan ever complained about, but they removed it from their salad emoji to make sure it was inclusive to vegans.
I guess just that you couldn't have one. You couldn't have a Cobb salad plus a watercress salad, huh?
No. But see, there's still tomatoes in there, which are like, me not being inclusive to the anti-fruitists out there. So, I mean, eventually you're just going to have an empty bowl that says salad in it, and hopefully that the English language doesn't offend somebody.
Well, that's been a problem too, but I notice every time there's an update, especially on Android, the pages of emojis get longer and longer, and then they try to do tie-ins. You notice this with your Android device, the emojis are movie tie-ins and things like that. There was a whole bunch of Star Wars stuff. I want to know what Lucasfilm paid to have that set up.
Oh, Disney owns everything. And
yeah,
so
Disney owns
plenty.
It all. Oh, dear
me. The only emoji that I ever use is the thumbs up, and that's just because it's nice and simple.
Yeah, it's a thumbs up. Maybe the occasional smiley face, but I'll do that with a colon and a closed parentheses.
No, that's too old.
That's old school. But have you noticed that most of these programs, though, will take that and convert it into their yellow, sunny, smiley face?
I do my best to change or use any sort of – if I ever do use an emoji, which I use very infrequently, I try my best to make sure I find a combination that doesn't trigger their auto-conversion.
Doesn't trigger the auto-conversion. All right. Hey, Alan, thank you much for pitching in this time. We'll be back with more of the tech news you can use here on Boomer Tech Radio with goodies, gadgets, and gizmos. Remember, you can write us at boomertechradio@gmail.com. Make your subscriptions. Download the podcast by going to Stitcher, iTunes, or the Google Play Store and punching in Boomer Tech Radio. We'll be back right after the news at the top of the hour here on Boomer Tech Radio.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? No, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at AdvancedAutoReading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.
Tom, I'm Ron DeRockstra. President Trump is feeling pretty confident as he heads off to his summit next week in Singapore with North Korea's leader.
I feel that Kim Jong-un wants to do something great for his people, and he has that opportunity. And he won't have that opportunity again. It's never going to be there again. So I really believe that he's going to do something very positive for his people, for himself, his family.
President speaking in Quebec as he finished up his part of the G7 summit this weekend. Mr. Trump says he'll know within the first minute whether Kim's serious about nuclear talks. Some 600 homes have been destroyed as lava from the Kilauea volcano that flowed into Kapoho Bay has created nearly a mile of new land. Jim Kawaikawa of the U.S. Geological Survey says the flow field of lava from the volcano was virtually unchanged Friday.
The area of the flow is flow field is about 9 square miles. There was no change in the lateral boundaries of the flows, but the ocean entry was fairly wide.
Officials with U.S. Geological Survey says the flow is still very active. There's no way to know when the eruption will end or if more lava-spewing vents will open. A 4.4 magnitude earthquake shook parts of northern Oklahoma and neighboring Kansas early this morning. Geologists say the earthquake was recorded around 8:59 a.m. about 16 miles east of Cherokee. That's about 100 miles northwest of Oklahoma City. People as far away in Wichita, Kansas, about 75 miles northeast of the earthquake's epicenter, reported feeling the quake as well. And some residents more than 100 miles north of Wichita in Manhattan, Kansas, also reported feeling tremors. Good news that no injuries or damage has so far been reported. News and analysis at townhall.com. I'm Ron DeRockstra.
Want to change how you feel significantly? ReliefFactor.com will do that for you. Support for temporary relief of minor aches and pains. If you're out there exercising, you go a little bit too far, as I did on Saturday, you definitely need Relief Factor on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Actually, I take it every day, as do tens of thousands of people. They know that they should have omega, which is fish oil, resveratrol, which you can get from drinking red wine, but you don't know how much. Icaria and Curcumin all together, carefully calibrated, perfectly formulated, the combination of four natural supplements that everyone agrees you ought to be taking every single day. This makes it easy to do in the amount that is appropriate for your body. The starter pack is $19.95. You try it for 3 weeks. Put everything else away that your doctor says you can put away. Don't not take what he tells you to take. And then see if you don't feel terrific. You'll feel much better. ReliefFactor.com works. Tens of thousands of people say so. Their testimonials are abundant and real and sincere. Go and watch them and then get ReliefFactor.com.
Facebook executive Sheryl Sandberg says MIT's graduating class should use technology as a force for good, but she warned that others might use it for harm.
Sandberg is the company's chief operating officer. During her commencement speech at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, she stated Facebook leaders did not see all the risks coming and did not do enough to stop them. She told the students to own their mistakes to prevent future ones.
That's correspondent Dennis Crowley reporting. The social media giant's been under intense scrutiny in the wake of privacy scandal that involved a data mining firm. A man in the custody of a Los Angeles police officer critically wounded this morning after being shot during a struggle with officers inside a hospital exam room. The man had been arrested by gang officers when he was in the room. He began struggling, and at least one of the officers opened fire. More on these stories at townhall.com. A former seminary president dismissed over his response to two rape allegations made by students says he won't give the featured sermon at the Southern Baptist Convention's annual meeting next week in Dallas.
Tate Patterson withdrew Friday. He was invited last year to give the sermon. If he hadn't withdrawn, meeting participants would have had to vote next week to block him. Patterson was dismissed last month from Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary in Fort Worth, Texas. A seminary official says in one case, Patterson wanted to meet with a student who told him she'd been raped in order to break her down. Patterson also was accused of saying women should almost always stay with abusive husbands. Patrick Frost reporting.
Pastor Greg Laurie hosts a massive gospel crusade at AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas tomorrow. Harvest America is a free event, and Laurie says it'll be available as a dedicated high-def signal, so if anybody wants to view it in a church sanctuary or a movie theater setting. News and analysis at townhall.com.
It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423. And hello once again. Welcome to Hour 2 of Boomer Tech Radio. I am Bob Belongi.
Along with Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world. We got the goodies, the gadgets, and the gizmos, the tech news that you can use. We certainly hope. And we have had an interesting week. We're involved in several projects here, and we'll talk about some of them. One of them involving the evolution of video out in the field, because in the last 10 years, which is the amount of time we've been doing this particular project, video has evolved quite a bit.
That's significantly.
And the equipment
amazingly
that we use
has
evolved considerably.
Radically, definitely.
Yeah, just in 10 years' time.
Just amazing.
This week I got a call from a friend of ours who we helped him find a new computer because he's in his 80s. And he needed something simple so he could do his email in and out, do a little bit of basic word processing. He didn't need anything powerful or fancy. So the computer we settled on was an HP all-in-one. In other words, there aren't a lot of wires in this thing. Now, I'm not big fans of all-in-ones because, let's say your monitor fails, your whole computer's out of whack
right
for a while. But for most people, that isn't, you know, If the monitor fails, a lot of people don't know how to replace it. So it's not as big of a deal, and it doesn't take up much footprint, and you're only plugging in one thing instead of a couple of things and then having to connect them up.
Right.
So all-in-ones do make a certain amount of sense. Certainly fans of the iMac love, you know, they love their all-in-ones. The only quibble I have with most all-in-ones is, for whatever reason, the USB ports where you hook in the memory sticks and you plug in the keyboard and you plug in the mouse and all that, are always all the way around on the back.
That's
where you
crazy
can't possibly find them.
Well, they're not very friendly.
They're
not user-friendly.
Easy to access.
So one of the things you can do, though, is plug in a little port that brings
which
those around the
front. Which is what I did. I put a little USB hub,
mm-hmm,
and that's where our friend can plug in his camera and other stuff.
Right.
Now, it's interesting, when you're trying to communicate the problem with your guru, if you have a tech guru in your life, whether it be someone like me or the 12-year-old kid who plugs in all your stuff for you.
Geek Squad, doesn't matter.
Geek Squad. Defining exactly what the problem is sort of important to them being able to figure out what has possibly gone wrong.
Right, it's quite important.
It doesn't come on.
Okay.
You know, have you turned the power on?
There are no songs. Okay.
I can't find, you know, or such and such is gone.
Yeah.
What does that
rarely
mean?
Rarely does something just
disappear.
Vanish,
yes.
And rarely does a piece of hardware simply stop working.
Right. It does. That does happen.
It certainly can happen. And in this case, it was implied that the computer had broken. That this brand new computer had broken.
Right.
And when I went down, I started noticing a few other things. When you troubleshoot this stuff, start thinking about, you know, as we always say on the show, think about the simple things first. And you would be surprised how often the help desk, and to some of us it's almost an insult when the help desk goes, is it plugged in?
To which you want to go,
well, of course it's plugged. Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
But maybe you've got an active dog. Maybe, but
right. Maybe the vacuum cleaner sucked up a wire. Or
exactly.
I've had if it's on a power strip, and there's it has a surge protector in it.
And it has a switch.
It has a switch, and if you've had a power surge or whatever, it may have tripped the power strip off.
Correct.
So. You know, those are easy things for you to check.
If your outlet happens to be on a GFI, a ground fault interrupter, normally ground fault interrupter outlets are near sinks, like in the bathroom, mm-hmm. in the kitchen, mm-hmm. or outside. Mm-hmm. But if in the course of plugging your stuff in, you have tied into a circuit that is connected to a ground fault interrupter, and that unit has been triggered, you won't get any power. So make sure that you're not sharing. And the outlet that you're plugged into, that your computer is plugged into, may not have the little button and the light on it, but it may be connected to one that does. So especially if you've been through a do-it-yourself remodel, your outlet in your little office, if you've made a little office, might be tied to the GFI outlet
in the
on
kitchen.
The other side of that wall.
Yeah, maybe the kitchen's on the other side of the wall.
Rarely, if it's summertime and you have plugged in a portable air conditioner, maybe the circuit breaker popped.
Right.
Make sure that other things in the room are working and it's just the computer that isn't.
Sometimes when I've moved into a new place, I don't know that an outlet is related to a switch on the wall.
Ah, yes.
And I'm just like, oh, this outlet doesn't work. And it took me a while. I'd been a renter for a long time. It took me a while to learn that, let me see if there's switches related to these outlets, which is handy in some spaces mm-hmm. because you can flip the light switch on and it turns a light on. You may not have a ceiling light for that switch to work.
Yep. Here's a clue, by the way. It is a standard practice among electricians that if an outlet is controlled by a wall switch, it's installed upside down.
Oh.
Not always. But if you see an outlet and it's upside down, in other words, the little face has got the mouth on the up, you know, a standard outlet has two vertical slots and a little round slot for the ground. If the grounds are on top, in other words, the outlet is installed inverted, that is a sign that that outlet is controlled by a switch.
That's interesting because my first thought with that, and I've encountered that, is who's the moron that put this in? You know, I don't care one way or the other, but it's like, usually the ground peg is
below.
On the bottom.
Looks like a little face.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's a practice among
Mr. Bill face.
Yeah, that's a practice among electricians, and that indicates a wall switch controlled outlet. Not all the time.
Well, of course not.
But if your computer is plugged into an outlet and it's upside down, start looking for the wall switch.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be in a whole different room. This is especially if you've moved into an apartment or a house that isn't brand new,
mm-hmm.
and it's maybe been remodeled a few times. Mm-hmm. Start looking at things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the case of our friend, the clue came when he said, well, this box isn't working too, and unfortunately our friend doesn't know what to call things. And his router and modem were also dark. Aha.
Which means you're definitely not going to connect with the Internet if that
right,
happens.
Right, right. Because I told him, I said, well, try making, because sometimes your screen will go blank because Windows has tried to do an update.
Right.
And it gets hung up and the screen goes blank.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, is there any pilot light or anything? No. I said, try holding down the power switch and forcing it shut down. No, nothing happens. Okay, this is not a unique to the computer problem. As it turns out, when he got his about two computers back, he bought a big, bulky, uninterruptible power supply. And an uninterruptible power supply is a big box that sits down on the floor. Usually offices use these all the time.
And they're usually heavy because they're basically a battery.
They've got a big lead-acid battery
yes.
in them. And what they have is an inverter. An inverter takes DC power and converts it into something resembling it. And that's an important distinction. Something resembling what comes out of your wall socket. Really good ones, it looks a lot like what comes out of your wall socket. Cheap ones, it only kind of looks like what comes out of your wall socket. And that's a distinction, because some pieces of electronics are really touchy about what are called modified sine wave inverters. And in fact, you can overheat some things. Mm-hmm. And never try to plug a motor-driven device into a cheap inverter.
Oh, yeah.
You will fry it.
Destroy it.
And you'll
yes.
blow up the inverter most likely.
Yep.
Because of the starting surge current that motors demand. Anyway, we started sniffing around, and this was really interesting. The person who put the office together had plugged in this UPS behind a set of drawers. So you had to pull the drawers out to get to the wall plug. And we pulled the UPS out, and the first thing we tried was we took it to another wall socket that was known good, plugged it in, and still it would not turn on. So what this told me was that the UPS had failed.
Right.
So the solution for the short term was to get him a power strip, just a regular old power strip,
mm-hmm.
plug it in the wall, and plug everything back in, boom, it all came back, and his computer then spent the next hour updating.
Updating. Thank you, Bill Gates.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes. Which leads me to sort of the topic of this segment. Do you, in your normal, everyday home computing operation, need a big, bulky UPS to get along?
Good question.
It all depends on what it is exactly that you're doing. Now,
right.
in Brenda's office where she works, they have a number of UPSs because some of these computers are very allergic to shutting down abruptly.
Yeah, and when you're in the middle of a product, you lose everything.
The whole idea of an uninterruptible power supply, it doesn't keep you going for hours and hours. The UPS, as it is known, is designed to give you just enough time
right.
to get your computer, save your work, and shut down the computer. It does not allow you to keep going because if that power is down, then probably your modem and router are down
right.
if your main power is down.
Right. So what happens in the middle of the night when the UPS goes off? If your computer is on, but you're not doing anything with a computer. In other words, you don't have any open files, you don't have anything. There's not a lot of chance that something's going to be corrupted.
Correct. Unless you are actively writing a file.
Exactly.
Most computers are designed to
right. take that kind of a power hit.
Yeah, and take it in stride.
Right.
You know, just shut down.
And UPSs don't last forever. They're not going to, you know, you don't have 8-hour UPSs. Nobody has that.
Unless you're a federal agency.
Well, that's yeah. possible, yeah, that there's some kind of major battery bank backup for that, but a UPS itself is not. You'll get, what, an hour, hour and a half maybe out of it?
Usually it's more along the lines of 10 to 15 minutes.
Right. So the idea is that, like Bob says, if you have an open file and you're working on this thing and the power goes out, save your work, close it down, and you can even just shut down the computer in a logical manner. But if this all happens in the middle of the night or you're gone on vacation and the computer's on, really shouldn't be a problem.
Yeah.
It's when you have files open or you're trying to store files that creates the problem. You can get corrupt files and that sort
right.
of thing. So a lesson there, too, is where do you store your stuff?
Right.
Backup, backup, backup. That's really important, either on the cloud or a local device. That will also help you preserve the documents that you have.
In my case, I am in fact working on a book. I've also do quite a few other things that requires some degree of word processing. I've taken to using Google Docs. Oh, but you're sharing it with Google. Blah, blah, blah. Big, you know.
In this case, big deal.
Yeah, big deal.
You might,
and
you know, if you're plotting some kind of conspiracy, well, then, yeah, you might want to be concerned about that. But in this case, it hasn't done anything.
But I can open that document on my tablet, close it on the tablet, open it on my PC. By the way, you can have it open on both at the same time. Go to my MacBook, work on it, and my little tablet, and work on it. All from, you know, four different devices working on the same thing. I can share that document with somebody else, and you can collaborate on it. And if the computer dies, it's constantly being saved.
Right, right.
So at worst, you'll lose about a minute's worth of work.
Yep.
In my view, when does a UPS become a must? If you're doing a lot of video editing and you are very involved in it, and you like Premiere Pro and Final Cut, they auto-save about every 10 to 15 minutes. Well, you can do a lot in 10 to 15 minutes, and it's very frustrating because this has happened to me to have a computer shut down in the midst after doing about 20 very intense edits, and suddenly all your work goes poof.
Yep. Save early, save often.
Save early, save often, yes.
I think in a business application, it also has some validity because...
Mission critical stuff.
Well, let's say you have a very large access... program you're working in, a file you're working in, or you have a large Excel spreadsheet, something like that. You're either managing data in Access or you're working in Excel with a spreadsheet, and it's a fairly complicated, large spreadsheet, and you've got all kinds of links across the different pages in the spreadsheet and all this kind of stuff, and all of a sudden, bling, and it corrupts that file. That would just be devastating. Hopefully you have a backup. You know, if it's that kind of critical to the business, you back it up every day. But a UPS can help you preserve that. Again,
right.
You can save that file in a logical way and then close the program. And even if the computer then does have a forced power hit shutdown, you're probably not losing your file.
Now, better grades of UPSs actually connect to your computer. They tie up a UPS port, but they have software that monitors the conditions. Now, unfortunately, this is another piece of software, another application that's running in parallel with all your other operations. So you might see a little bit of a slowdown, but what that does is that as soon as you switch over to reserve power, it tells your computer to save files and shut down in an orderly manner. But for the most part, especially with solid-state drives, and a good practice here is you use this, if you have a large desktop PC, is you have a relatively small solid-state drive as your boot drive. In other words, what you start up with,
mm-hmm.
but you store all your data on larger spinning hard drives.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you can, especially if you're working with video, you want to, of course, get the best spinning hard drive, get enterprise grade.
At a minimum.
If it's Western Digital, which I do not recommend, by the way, but if you have to get Western Digital, go with what they call their Black Series, which are essentially server-grade drives. Don't go with the Eco drives because they're junk. Sorry, Western Digital.
Yeah, you'll lose.
Yeah, don't get
they
the green
They will fail
drives.
On you more than likely at some point.
I'm a fan of Seagate, although Toshiba makes good drives, and Samsung makes very good drives, especially their solid-state drives. It's relatively easy now, and there's a lot of do-it-yourself stuff on the web on converting. If you've got a laptop that's a couple of years old and maybe you want it to boot up a little bit faster. Now, I did this when I rebuilt my home PC. I used a solid-state drive as the main boot drive. And it's really nice being able to hit the button and be looking at the desktop in less than 20 seconds.
That's amazing. I think most of us would love that. I have a thing at work where the IT people, it goes through all these iterations. I can turn the computer on and walk down the hall and get my, you know, water glass full and come back, and it might be ready for me to log on.
Yeah.
And it's, I don't know what it's doing, but it's doing a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah, and my Mac was terrible for this, my MacBook Pro, my 2012, which, by the way, as a sidebar, if you have a 2012 MacBook Pro or Mac Mini or something like that, you will survive the next Mac OS update,
but
probably
then,
not the one after that.
Still, that's an amazing run for a computer.
Mac OS Mojave will support mid-2012 and on, but if you have, say, a 2010 MacBook Pro, you're out of luck. Don't update because your machine won't handle it if you're a Mac person.
The thing is, of course, the machine will keep running on the older operating system, but it's sort of like going the way of Windows 7.
Yeah.
You want to keep it off of a network. Give it a different task to do or keep it off line.
Yeah.
You know, don't have it connect to the Internet because then it would be vulnerable to viruses and things like that.
I have a Mac Pro Tower that's running Snow Leopard, and its only job is to work as a file server.
Yep.
It does not connect directly to the Internet. It's just on the in-house net. And its job is basically to be a big, noisy filing. It's not noisy. It's very quiet. It's a big filing cabinet. And you can put the old Mac Pro Tower. You can get four big hard drives in that thing and swap them out fairly easily.
Mm-hmm. That's the, you know, we've talked many times on this show about repurposing what appears to be obsolete equipment, mm-hmm. but it's not. It's obsolete only maybe from a perspective of you can no longer update the operating system, but that doesn't mean that the computer is useless.
Correct. We have in this very room here, you can single-purpose old hardware.
Right.
For instance, we have an old computer in here. It's actually missing a bunch of keys and things like that. But its only job is, and I don't even think it has a hard drive. It all runs off of a little solid-state drive inside of it. Its only job is to take our voices, our sound, and convert them into an audio stream, which then goes up to the website. Runs on what's called Linux Mint. And that's one of the distributions of Linux that is very popular. If you have an old machine and you like to tinker with the stuff, get one of the distributions of Linux and pop it on there because it has a user base that is not necessarily it isn't profit-driven. It is community-driven.
And I'm willing to bet, just the way things are these days online, is that if you want to know more about how to mess around with these things and what the alternate capabilities are or what your options are, Google it.
Yeah.
And there will be YouTube videos on these things. You might have to wade through a bunch of stuff, but there's a lot of good stuff out there. And the great thing about those videos, of course, is that a lot of times they show you stuff versus having to read some text that maybe doesn't make as much sense. So if you're a real visual learner, and the other great thing about that is that you can watch it again and again and again and again until you kind of get the hang of it. And invite a friend over. Start messing around with it. I mean, what have you got to lose?
Exactly.
And the maker movement is, you know, still big.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger. In fact, we have a mini maker fair coming here to Shasta County. It's this time it's going to be at the Shasta District Fairgrounds.
Yeah, yeah.
And the first one they had in the convention center, or whatever they call it, Civic Center.
Yeah.
And
Civic
Auditorium was very successful. And I think the fairgrounds is actually a better place for something like that.
Because there are some things that will go very well outside.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's also, I think. There may be more, there probably isn't more room, but it's probably a little more suited to the maker ethos, if you will.
Yeah.
So maker environment. So that's exciting. We're going to have to go to that.
And as I've said before, and it will bear repeating, if you've got a, let's say, a 10-year-old, 11-year-old young person, boy or girl, because there's a lot of girls in the maker movement.
Yep.
And it's not just stuff with wires. It can be woodworking. It can be fiber craft. It can be, but with a technical slant to it.
Right, artistic, steampunk.
Yeah.
No, that would be cool.
That's really big.
Yep.
Alternative housing solutions. There was an issue of Make magazine that talked all about tiny houses and do-it-yourself houses, straw houses, which are really big.
And also using things like Arduinos and Raspberry Pis to do other things.
Right.
And a programming type thing. And this is sexist by far, but it's the musculature for make is in the brain.
Yeah.
It's not, you don't have to be brawny to make certain things happen. And so, come on, girls.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Come on, everybody. Old, young, doesn't matter.
When we were at CES, we encountered a couple of young women engineers who had started out as going, I can do that too. And now they were working for a big company as full blown. I think they were both full.
Yep. Electrical
master,
engineers.
MSE or BSEEs at the very least. I think they had their masters. But ladies, it's out there. Women, it's out there.
Besides
girls,
that,
it's out there.
Think about that. You know, if you have some task you want done, go for it. Make the computer do the work, right?
Boomer Tech Radio, back with more tech news you can use right after this. It might be the car or light truck that gets you to your job every day. Maybe your child drives it to school, or perhaps your drivers deliver goods to the customers who keep your business going. The bottom line is, you rely heavily on that vehicle to be safe and reliable day after day, and that means regular maintenance by professionals trained in the latest automotive repair techniques. For Brenda and myself, that means Advanced Automotive is the only repair shop we trust with our personal vehicles. Advanced Automotive does everything they can to make car care easy. Founded in 1993 by Tim Morlock and now owned by his son Cody, carrying on a tradition of honest work at a fair price. Find out for yourself by visiting AdvancedAutoReading.com or go to RepairPal.com, or you could just call 530-244-4423. It's a great little repair shop that's a bit hard to find, but worth the effort, at 5756 F West Side Road in Reading. Advanced Automotive.
Hi, this is Sharon Clark, owner of Home Helpers. Join me at 9 a.m. every Wednesday for Generations Talk Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Topics will include resources and businesses that you need to know about. We will talk money, travel, healthcare, and more. Embrace aging. Listen to Generations Talk Radio, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. here on KCNR 1460. Archive shows at generationstalkradio.com.
Founded in 1995, GI Pathology is the only physician-owned laboratory in the United States dedicated solely to the practice of gastrointestinal and liver pathology. The company provides the highest quality GI pathology diagnosis made exclusively by one of our fellowship-trained gastrointestinal and liver pathologists. GI Pathology delivers results to its Northern California client base within an industry-leading 24 hours. Call 888-2-GI-PATH or go to www.gipath.com for more information.
No one plans to visit the emergency room, but when life's accidents happen, you need to get treated, not seated. Shasta Regional Medical Center is located at 1100 Butte Street in downtown Reading. They have emergency room doctors and staff that guarantee you will be seen by a medical professional within 30 minutes of your arrival. Shasta Regional Medical Center believes in delivering patient-centered health care with compassion and respect for every patient and their family.
Purpose-driven banking. That's the vision behind the founding of Five Star Bank in 1999. Services inspired by partnership and defined by shared vision and goals. Five Star Bank, a champion of local economic development and community stewardship. Your success is their success. Now that's smart people doing good business. In a world that's both more connected and more isolated by high tech, Five Star Bank brings you a personal touch to small business banking, cash management, and online services. Five Star Bank, consistently rated among the very best by industry associations, rating agencies, and of course, customers and partners just like you. Your partner in success is Five Star Bank. FiveStarBank.com. Visit your local branch at 358 Hartnell in Reading. Progressive, professional, personal. That's Five Star Bank. Equal Housing Lender, member FDIC.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kara Tennant with CARE Animal Hospital, and I'm inviting you to join me on the Carl and Linda Morning Show. We will be discussing all of Reading's local pet needs and how to keep your pet happy, healthy, and safe. Care Animal Hospital is a local veterinary clinic located on the corner of Hilltop Drive and Lake Boulevard. Make sure your best friend has the best possible care today.
Join Dr. Kara Tennant on Friday morning, June the 15th from 8 to 9 on Free Fire Radio on AM 1460 KCNR.
Ever since we started Boomer Tech Radio, Advanced Automotive has been part of our program. But Tim and Cody Morlock are more than just our advertisers. They're our friends, and they are our first choice when we have our personal vehicles serviced. Why? Well, because after your home, your car is probably your second biggest investment, and it's vital that it be safe and dependable. Advanced Automotive has a skilled staff of certified technicians ready to diagnose your vehicle and get it running right. Advanced Automotive is listed on RepairPal.com, a national rating site where customers can leave reviews and even get an estimate on the cost of a repair. Go where the professionals take their vehicles to be serviced. Advanced Automotive in Reading, on the web at advancedautoreading.com. Visit them at 5756 F Westside Road, just off Bonneview. Call them at 530-244-4423. Advanced Automotive.
Every week, Boomer Tech Radio brings you goodies, gadgets, and gizmos, tech news you can use. We are brought to you in Reading by Advanced Automotive of Reading, safe, reliable car care for the customers and our community. Our catchy little theme tune is called 8-Bit Junkie, composed and performed by George Wood in merry old England. It is being used by his very own permission. We recorded it off of the PodSafe Music Network. You want to get in touch with us? Write to boomertechradio at gmail.com. You can also drop an email to bob at kcnr1460.com. You can subscribe to the show by logging on to boomertechradio.com. Either get the podcast directly from there, or you can go to Stitcher, iTunes, or Google Play. Lots of ways to do it. And if you want to follow along the stories that we like to follow here in Boomer Tech Radio from the major outlets, get the Flipboard app for your iOS or Android device. Subscribe to Boomer Tech Radio. Why don't you see how many subscribers we have? It's got to be somewhere in the tens by now.
there's that, right? There's 54 followers.
54. If we
There's been a lot of views.
Yeah.
It says 33,000 viewers. So I don't know if it counts, you know, if I'm a repeat customer, if that counts me as a viewer 14 times as I go in there, right? At 14 different times.
It still adds up.
We like to share, too, our experiences with technology that we hope we provide some valuable insights because we're just two people of, you know, on the street.
Yeah.
And we're average folk just like everybody else. And we're using technology just like everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, we're basically consumers of that. If we sound like we know more than the average person, that's because we fake it. And but we found over time that our opinions of things, say, at Consumer Electronics Show of like, oh, that's really cool, too. Don't see that going very far.
3D ain't gonna fly.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And even the major bloggers who, you know, make a living at this kind of thing, I mean, that is
you
their
mean
job.
You get paid for it.
Well, that is their job, right. Then we often hold some of the same opinions that they do. So we've learned not to be shy about that our impressions are, you know, granted they're our own, but they seem to apply to quite a few people. So we hope that our comments about our experiences with technology, the pros and cons, just based on our perspective, is potentially useful, you know, to folks. So sometimes we talk about our own experiences, and other times we share the tech news that we gather up on, Bob gathers up. I don't have time for that. He does all that work. On the Boomer Tech Flipboard page, because sometimes there's, you know, interesting news about that. And to give you an example, even in my industry and following along with tech news is how I learned that the GO 17 weather satellite has got some technical issues, got some hardware issues. And I was the only one in the office that knew that. And that's because of
an article
on Flipboard, actually, or somewhere along the line that I ran into in tech news.
Yeah.
So that was kind of handy to know that. So it was quite relevant. But you found an interesting story about Amazon's new toy.
Right. And a little more background to that. We mentioned last week and the week before that we had bought these little plugs called Wemo. They're made by Belkin, and they plug in the wall, and you connect them via an app to your home network, and then you plug a lamp or it could be a fan or something similar, and they look like a little cord, like a multi-plug you would stick on the end of a cord or in a wall outlet.
Yep, that's exactly what they look like.
They are basically an internet-controlled switch, and you can control them by an app. Well, why would I want to break out my smartphone to turn a light on and off? I'll just walk over and turn the light on. However,
what if your hands are full?
What if your hands are full? What we have done with our Wemos, and it's a two-pack. We picked them up at Costco, and I think it was $49 for two of them.
They were a little pricey, and the price of those will come down.
Yeah, yeah. So we got two of them. We put one in the living room, tied a light to it, and this is kind of the neat thing. Through the app, you can program it like a wall timer. You can put on times and off times and set it to either go on with sunrise and sunset, or go on and off, as we have with ours, a couple of times a day. We have it come on in the morning when we're getting up and have it come on in the evening, so we've got light in the living room. And it kind of gives the place a lived-in look.
Mm-hmm.
There's a vacation mode where it'll kick on and off at random times through the day, so it looks like somebody's moving around in the house. But you can also tie it to your smart speaker.
Right.
And so we can say, hey, keyword, living room on, and the light pops on.
Right.
You can say living room off, the light pops off. Yeah, I can go turn my own, but let's suppose I had a busted ankle or something like that, or I was in my 90s and was no longer ambulatory.
And the lamp that you need is across
Correct.
The room.
So for people in that situation, we often use our Echo speaker as a timer because it's a lot faster than going over and hitting 50 buttons on the timer. Just say,
"Oh, your hands are gooey."
Yeah. Hey, lady in the box, give me a 5-minute timer. And we use it for the barbecue. We use it for cooking in the kitchen all the time. Now we're starting to control lights with it.
All by voice command.
All by voice command. In the bedroom, we've got one that we have set up. And we have a different smart speaker in the bedroom. We have, and this is, you can actually do both. We have a Echo in our living room, and we ended up with a Google Home, which looks sort of like a fat salt shaker, to be honest.
Yeah, a really big salt shaker.
And the Amazon Echo that is in the living room controls the living room light. And the
Google Home
in the bedroom controls the bedroom light. I just hooked that up today. So you can use both voice control and set up program times through the app. One thing it hasn't figured out how to do yet, but this is before long, is setting the schedule via voice commands, because that's a little bit of an involved thing. I bet that's probably coming up very, very soon, just as... I don't know if you know this about if you have a Google Home. You can actually tell your Google Home, set an alarm Monday through Thursday at 5 a.m. And the Google Home will figure that out.
Yeah, it's pretty...
Works successfully.
Pretty interesting. And then until you cancel it, it continues that. Or you have a software update potentially. We found recently that for some reason it got shut down and... whatever happened, I don't know if it got a power off or what have you, then it lost that programming. We just happened to wake up in time, which is kind of crucial. So now we're going to make sure that we check that every Sunday night to make sure that it's still there.
And it's just a Google check alarm.
Right.
I noticed I left out the other part of the keyword.
Well, yeah. So hopefully no one's Google Home listening to this. It triggers off.
I don't want a microphone in my house. Well, the fact is you do have microphones in your house if you own a smart room or something like that. Yes, if you don't want to have any technology around, that's fine.
I think...
Be my guest.
Backtracking to voice commands is the cool thing about these app-controlled switches is that the app can be updated to bring that capability to the switch. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you have to have software in the switch to make that happen. Chances are that the app will be updated to make that happen at some point.
Yeah.
So that's kind of slicky-poo because you have the outlet in the wall, which is sort of passive, and it's the app that's dynamic and can be upgraded and add capabilities to the system.
So the name brand of the Switch itself, and like I said, it's a 3-inch by 1-inch by 1-inch device that plugs into the wall. It's called the Wemo Mini.
And Wemo, I think, is spelled W-I-M-O.
W-E-M-O.
W-E-M-O, okay.
And they are manufactured by Belkin, which is a major maker of computer peripherals. But there are hundreds of devices now that can be controlled by these voice control speakers. A new product out from the people who brought you the Amazon Echo. Remember when the Echo first came out? Almost 2 years ago.
What do you do with this thing, right?
Yeah, and it completely took people by surprise because they launched it very quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are thousands and thousands of apps. You can tell it to seek out podcasts. You can say, hey, what's your name? And I think it worked once. We haven't tried it lately. You can tell it to say, play the Boomer Tech Radio podcast, and it should go to TuneIn Radio.
It'll probably go to TuneIn or maybe even iTunes or something.
But you can get it to play.
It found it just boom like that. Wow.
By the way, that internet radio that Sea Crane sells will do the same thing in a radio-type format. But you can do – we're getting very close to Captain Picard ordering his tea Earl Grey hot. New product, and we have, now let's combine that with a Fire Stick. And we have a Fire Stick, which is a plug-in device for streaming video off the internet into your television.
It's a little clunky.
Yeah. The Fire Stick, we have a first-generation Fire Stick, and I'm about ready to replace it because it is first-generation, it's fussy, and it overheats.
Yes.
That's one of the problems with the Fire Stick is that they crammed so much stuff into something that looks like a fat flash drive, it does have a tendency to overheat. In fact, we saw the little thermometer. It pops up a little thermometer icon on your screen, and we're like, okay, we've never seen that before. but, of course, the Google dongle, the Apple TV. We had an Apple TV. In fact, we still have on a first-generation Apple TV. And there was nothing... You couldn't get any free stuff on the Apple TV except maybe some YouTube. And it seemed to buffer more than the Fire Stick or the Google dongle.
Mm-hmm.
The Fire Stick has worked rather well.
Yep.
But we're probably about ready to transition into a new device. And this one has got some possibilities. The completely hands-free Amazon Fire TV Cube is a 4K streaming device. That incorporates an Alexa speaker.
See, I see this as a clever ploy on your part to get a new electronic toy.
Well, at $120, it is still quite a bit cheaper than the 4K Apple TV. And this is 4K, so it's future-proof.
Right. Well, I don't know future-proof totally, but certainly future-thinking.
Yeah.
Future-compatible.
Prime, let's see here. It was introduced at $30 off, and that, unfortunately, is Friday only. But on the Fire TV and the TV Stick, you do get voice command, but only when you press a remote. The Cube has the technology with far-field technology, and it will, if you have a compatible TV, it will control the set and do the volume, things like that.
Right.
Again, well, I can walk over there, or I can pick up the remote and do it myself. But what if you can't?
Or don't want to, or you have 20 remotes, and like which one's which, you know, that sort of thing. So it can incorporate all of those things into one.
The Cube also has the capability of being a universal remote, so you can run your satellite receiver. You can run your DVD player. Or your Blu-ray player via what are called IR blasters. And these are little remotes that send out the pulses that your remotes send out. So you can turn your TV up and down and do all these functions just by voice, as long as your device is among those that is. And if it's a major device, if it's a Samsung, a Sharp, or whatever,
probably will have that capability.
It should be on the list.
Yep. Should have that capability.
Yeah, priced at $119. Shipping starts on June the 21st. Prime members were able to pre-order it and save $30. That's pretty good. They can be pre-ordered for $89.99. Look for this offer to repeat itself. But yeah. Even at a full retail of $120, think about the amount of stuff that is crammed into this little cube.
There's something to be said for first-gen type of things, but this really isn't first-generation when you think about it, because what they've done is they've taken the Fire Stick concept and they've built in additional capabilities to it and probably upgraded the hardware and that sort of thing. So having an original Fire Stick, for instance, they've improved that, and now they improve it more. So this really isn't a first-generation type thing. And can be a good investment if you don't have one of these to begin with.
Right.
Then you may want to look into it as a possible option.
Now, I noted that a friend of ours who is not a terribly techie person, in fact, he only started actually texting about a year ago, and we're not going to name a name, but I did smile when I came across a Roku remote. And this friend of ours is one of the last people I would expect to have a streaming television device. But that's how ubiquitous they have become.
Well, yeah. I mean, it used to be everybody had a VCR, everybody had a recorder to, you know, you could set up the program to record your favorite shows off the cable and all that stuff. Everybody got used to that. And this is just sort of a modern version of that sort of thing.
By the way, Roku is another brand of Roku, TiVo, which you don't hear too much about anymore. TiVo was one of the first pause live TV, record something for playback, all without having to use tape. Roku is the same thing. It's a subscription type box. Apple TV is a subscription box. All that take a stream from the internet and allow you to cut the cord rather than having to watch something off of cable on their schedule.
Yep. So in talking, this show's all about tech in our lives, right?
Yeah.
And as things change, as we've been pointing out throughout this episode of Boomer Tech Radio, you asked the question earlier today when we were preparing for the show, what's it say about our world when you have to have tech to control your use of tech?
this new thing that Apple's pushing, we're going to allow you to take your life back with an app that will remind you to stop using apps. And they were so proud of it.
Yes, and we just thought that was really entertaining because what's it say about tech in our lives that you have to have an app that controls, reminds you?
You have to use technology to get you to stop using technology.
Exactly.
Seriously, though, internet addiction is a big thing.
It's a growing problem,
something
apparently.
Something that you have to be aware of. People in China apparently have got nothing on us Americans.
We have nothing on them.
Yeah, we've got nothing on them. People in this report out of Hong Kong that came to us from the New York Times, pedestrians glued to cell phones are so ubiquitous that they have a nickname called the Head Down Tribe.
Oh, my gosh. That's also very hard on you physically.
Yep.
When you do that. We're not meant to walk around with
members
our heads
down. Of the Head Down Tribe can be seen texting, watching videos, conducting financial transactions, all while dodging cars, tripping over potholes, and jamming up subway station entrances. The World Health Organization calls it distracted walking.
Absolutely.
And it's a growing health concern in China. Pedestrian deaths are making up a significant number of traffic-related fatalities. This spring, managers of a big shopping mall in a city in northwest China implemented a strategy to project members, pedestrian lanes specifically meant for cell phone users.
Only in China. That's sort of like those moving walkways in airports. You know, only cell phone users are allowed here, right? Oh, my goodness. It's a bike lane. It's the equivalent of a bike lane.
Yeah. there are messages along these pathways in very bright colors that say, please don't look down for the rest of your life. Path for the special use of the Head Down Tribe.
It's, there's a bunch of people that think, well, you know, maybe that's not going to keep people safe, but you know, it might work out that way. And this area is not the first city to experiment with special areas for mobile phone use. But like here, distracted driving is banned in China, and so they haven't done anything about distracted walking yet. But as you know, pedestrians get involved in the mix of cars, and so to take that one step further, what's going to happen with autonomous vehicles?
Yeah,
you know, are they going to recognize these distracted pedestrians? Because that's probably going to keep on happening. How do you keep these things separate? And the autonomous vehicles can't even stay away from the non-autonomous vehicles, let alone pedestrians. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all evolves in our lives, this part of the technological evolution that we're in.
In 2016, the German city of Augsburg embedded traffic lights right in the surface of the street so that texting pedestrians wouldn't go strolling out into the traffic.
Right, because they were already looking down. And so having your already looking down like that, they figured that people would see, be more aware, situationally aware of what the traffic lights were doing.
Yep. So Uber and Lyft are not just about car sharing anymore.
Uh-huh.
Uber is considering a takeover offer for a bike share company. Behind such programs, a City Bike in New York and Go Bike in San Francisco. Motivate is the name of the company. The company is valued at about $250 million. These hailing companies are seeking to expand their urban companies beyond bikes into such lines as scooters, which are becoming a big controversial thing.
Right, and they've been banned in some places until folks can figure out that, you know, the municipalities can figure some stuff out.
Finally, well, maybe not finally, depending on how long we dwell on this particular story, Washington Post says that Chinese government hackers have compromised the computers of a Navy contractor, stealing massive amounts of sensitive data related to undersea warfare.
Lovely.
Uh-oh. Including plans to develop a supersonic anti-ship missile for use on U.S. submarines by 2020. So the submarine would come up to the surface, launch a supersonic missile, which would be almost impossible to see coming in.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, surface-to-surface missiles travel at a, you know, kind of, they move right along, but apparently
a more stately pace.
Yeah.
More subdued pace than that. Well, it's interesting. So, you know, cybersecurity is huge, huge. And there's was probably a vulnerable. This is part of the problem of dealing with a contractor. Part of the contract is that you will protect this data. But what happens when they don't? I mean, whose head rolls? How do you? You can't ever get that data back.
Yeah, the contractor was not identified. 614 gigabytes of material relating to a closely held project known as Sea Dragon, and this is the big one, as well as signals and sensory data, submarine radio room information related to cryptographic systems.
Yep.
Okay. You want to talk about history repeating itself? A major intelligence coup of World War II was the ability to crack the Germans' Enigma code.
Right.
You want to see a great movie on the topic? Look at the Enigma game with Benedict Cumberbatch about Alfred Turing.
Yes.
And his original and Turing's rules actually dictate a lot of how our computers work today. He was an incredibly intelligent man.
Brilliant.
Tortured individual, literally and figuratively, because the British government hounded him literally to his death because of his sexual inclination.
Yep.
So we lost a brilliant man because
of social pressure.
Social pressure, yeah. But it was the cracking of the Enigma code that enabled allies to intercept and translate messages.
Yep.
From the Germans, and I believe another major development was the capture of an Enigma machine, which was a big deal.
Pretty cool stuff.
That's going to be interesting to see how that evolves.
Yeah, how it all plays out. We'll probably never know the extent. that's all the time for this week. Goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news you can use wherever you go, whatever you do. Be safe and be good to each other. It's a given that your car or light truck is going to need service sooner or later, and often, waiting until later means a lot bigger repair bill. Now, there are many repair shops in town, so it pays to do your research and find out where your friends and neighbors take their vehicles and check reviews online as well. Advanced Automotive of Reading is listed on RepairPal.com, where customers just like you talk about their experience. Advanced Auto has been making quality auto care easy since 1993 and has a philosophy of keeping things simple. Stop by their shop at 5756 F West Side Road, just off Bonneview. You'll see vehicles from local businesses and first responders in the yard because those customers rely on cars and trucks that are safe and reliable. But more than that, safe vehicles mean a safer community. And honestly, it's the right way to do business. Check them out for yourself. Advanced Automotive, 5756 F West Side Road in Reading, 244-4423.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, community talk radio for the North State. This is KCNR, Shasta, Reading.